Welcome back to Shattering Mist. That was a pretty astute call from Paul, was it not, Kirk?
Well, yes, sir. It really was. He's got his finger on the pulse, certainly.
Yeah, it's always encouraging to know there's people out there who whose eyes are open and who have not only are aware of the facts, but have made the connections so that they understand who's doing what to whom and what the ultimate consequence of these things are going to be. You know, even when I challenged him, because, you know, I recognize that homosexuality is the lightning rod for conservative Christians to be opposed to, and right. It's the lightning rod for progressives, the socialist secular humanists, to advocate. You know, I don't want to be associated with anyone who's just against homosexuality for homosexuality's sake. And as I addressed that, he went immediately to the pathology of homosexuality and what it causes in a person in society. And boy, it was impossible to argue with it. Very astute.
Yeah. Hope he calls again.
Yeah. Myself as well. I understand you have a comment or question on the Grand Mufti.
Yeah, two things have happened since I talked to you last. I listened to a couple hour show with a guy named Craig Hewitt, and he pretty much confirmed everything that you've talked about for years and years and years, but in particular lately with ISIS and the government and our invasion, and it was sickening.
Yeah, the stupidity of the America's invasion of Afghanistan, of Iraq, of our bombing of Libya. Our arming and abetting of the dictator in Egypt.
Almost,
I mean, we've really made a mess.
Just verbatim. I mean, it could have been Shattering Mess the way they talk. They did, when he was talking to the host, he did bring up the Grand Mufti comment by Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you document that? It seems to me I saw a documentary years ago on the Grand Solution and all the players and the Nazis and the way they had the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And they really put this down to paper, and this is our plan, and this is why we're going to the final solution, get rid of the Jews in Europe. But it seems to me there was a connection with the Grand Mufti, even in that documentary, but I saw it so long ago, I won't swear.
Yeah, the way that I made the connection is that I read the reports from the Nuremberg trials, and in the Nuremberg trials, as those who were most responsible for the final solution, and the concentration camps designed to murder Jews was put into effect, that by their own testimony, and they talked about when the meetings took place, with whom they took place, that the Grand Mufti had met with all of the architects of the final solution, and that according to the Nuremberg trial testimony, had a very significant influence over their decisions. And he met with them prior to the meeting where the final solution was conceived. And then what Netanyahu was criticized for is that the Grand Mufti's meeting with Hitler was long after he had spent considerable time in Berlin working with and trying to influence the Nazis who were assigned the Jewish problem, as the Nazis would view it, and that his meeting with Hitler was before any one of these concentration camps were established and that the final solution was implemented. But after, if you had, I'm going to just put together a timeline here, it's not an exact timeline, but let's say that in June you have the meeting that Grand Mufti comes to Berlin in January, and he begins to meet with the Nazis most responsible for dealing with the Jews, January through June. In June, you have the meeting that was the secret meeting where the term final solution was conceived.
All right.
And then in November of that year, before the final solution is implemented, the Grand Mufti meets with Hitler and discusses this very thing, that the solution to the Jewish problem isn't exporting them, it is killing them. And then in February of the following year, is the first implementation of the final solution. So if you follow the whole process, in fact, we even now have the time that the Grand Mufti was in Berlin, because he left documents in the walls of the hotel that they just recently tore down. So if you put it all together and you read the Nuremberg trials and you say what the Germans who were witnesses there said of the Grand Mufti's influence and the timing and the meetings that he had and who he traveled with and met with, it's obvious that what Netanyahu said originally is absolutely true. Now, what Netanyahu has subsequently said is partly true, which is it's inappropriate to diminish the anti-Semitic nature of Mein Kampf and of Hitler, and to give the Nazis an alibi by blaming the final solution on the Grand Mufti. However, it is also inappropriate to not credit the Grand Mufti to a very substantial degree in the final solution, which is the killing of Jews rather than the exporting of Jews. They work collaboratively together in crafting this plan. And to acknowledge that is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and I spent probably a month doing this research. I've written about it extensively and spoken about it extensively on this program.
Well, I didn't think you were, wouldn't have your backup, but I just wasn't sure how to respond if I were to.
Yeah, you know, on the Prophet of Doom site where there's this story about the Mufti Mujahideen, which were the jihadist organization sponsored by the Grand Mufti to terrorize Jews in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about his background and the Nuremberg witnesses and yep. posted it all on the Islamic Terror timeline, and you will be able to access it via the Grand Mufti or the Mufti Mujahideen. Speaks of all of that. So what I came to know about it is written down there, and I wrote that probably, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought so. I just didn't know how to put the pieces together to start a little bit of research, because I hate to say something like that and then not be able to defend it.
Yeah, what I would do is go to the prophetofdoom.net site, look up the Grand Mufti, the Mufti Mujahideen, and the Grand Mufti himself is a significant character there. Read what I was able to discern from the research that I did, and then if you then just study, and there's so many articles on the Grand Mufti and his contribution to eliminating Jews. I mean, it's well known that the Grand Mufti was able to convince Hitler to create an SS unit that was not comprised of ethnically pure Germans, but instead of Muslims, because of the affinity between the SS and Islam.
Right.
And that SS unit was extraordinarily active in not only killing Jews, but assassinating Christians.
Well, I do know that I've read a lot of stuff about higher-ups in the Nazi regime who just wanted to get the Jews out of Europe. They would have been very happy to move them. So it wasn't the first thought in their mind is to let's go.
No, Hitler migrated. Hitler himself and the German higher ups migrated over time from let's just steal their property, let's blame them for everything, let's steal their property, and let's finance our regime on what we steal from them, making them the scapegoats to killing them en masse, wiping them out, and that the transition coalesced with the arrival of the Grand Mufti in Berlin.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah.
I want to tell you.
He is going to be, you know, in terms of trials, in terms of God hating people,
mm-hmm.
this highest ranking of all Muslims for his time is going to be, could well be in the top 10
mm-hmm.
of the most abhorred, detested people by the creator of the universe. So
he's right up there.
He would be a trial that again I would like to be a witness at, because he's going to be, you know, he's not up in the level of Hadrian as despised, not up probably at the level of Rabbi Akiva, certainly not at the level of Paul. Now, there's no one that God hates more than Paul.
No,
the wannabe apostle Paul.
But, very obvious.
He's way up there. Among people that God despises.
Now, if I was just listening to this show for the first time, and from a Christian background, and heard that, it would be stunning.
Yeah, to say that the person that God hates most in the world is Paul.
Yeah,
but it's obvious. I mean, the only person, there's only two people that God calls out by name to besmirch, and the two people are Esau and Esau for having embraced Ishmael's religious and societal proclivities, and for having walked, you know, away from and out of the covenant. The other is Shaul, who renamed himself Paul, and you know, he is brought up by name, by reputation, by character, by timing, by message.
Everywhere you
throughout
can.
The Torah, prophets, and Psalms. I mean, he's just all over it, and he's the person that God calls the plague of death. So there's no remedy for Paul.
Yeah, when you finally get it, you find him everywhere.
You find him everywhere. Yeah, he's everywhere. God warned us about him in every possible way, and by name, and we can't figure it out. We actually didn't need Yahweh's condemnation of Paul by name, by reputation, by timing, by message, by audience, to recognize that he was the man that God hates more than anyone in all of human history. All you have to do is read Paul's initial letter to the Galatians.
Yeah.
There's no way to read Galatians and have an open mind and come away with any other conclusion than this man is a complete and utter fraud, that he is anti-God, that he is lying to you, and that a religion based on his letters is a religion that's going to do nothing but anger God, estrange you from God. All you have to do is read Galatians or read Romans. Doesn't matter. Pick your poison.
Yeah.
Or read 2 Corinthians and find out that he admits that he's insane and that he's demon possessed, and deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, he openly admits everything. It's been twisted by all the preachers to kind of poo-poo that, you know. But
he admits to being a fraud. He says, you know, I pretend to be whatever serves my interest in winning pursuing my agenda over others. I'll pretend to be whatever serves my interest.
So what is it? Who says that?
Yeah, I know that also says that they're speaking for God.
Maybe if you're dating for, you know.
Yeah, then one of the things immediately, if you're going to communicate God's testimony, if your goal is to convey what he has shared with us, is that you cannot fight fire with fire. You cannot ally with those that are counter to God's message. That's why, you know, within the next few weeks, I'm leaving GCN. You cannot be associated with that which is wrong if you're going to promote that which is true.
Right.
Right. Exactly. And Paul was the absolute worst at admitting that I'll align with anything, no matter what it is, to pursue my agenda. And you can't do that. God will not. You're not going to speak and share God's message with any conviction and ally yourself with those that are in opposition to it, even if you have an area where you agree.
Yeah, the greatest stage, you know, is not the that's why you can't go to churches and do this.
No, if you want to share God's Yahweh's testimony, you have to do it on your own.
Right.
On your own, by yourself, out in the open, no secrets. No secrets, no affiliations of any kind. You know, you cannot have an affinity with any human organization. You can't ask for anybody's protection. You can't stand on anybody's rostrum. You can't align yourself with any agency or institution. You need to do it absolutely, unequivocally, boldly, bluntly, openly, with no affiliation other than Yahweh himself.
Well, you saw that when you began, too, because I remember
you can partner with this company.
How you were offered all these things.
Oh, yeah.
So they can piggyback onto your research.
Yeah.
To your translation.
Yeah, it's so many Christian and even atheist organizations that wanted to partner with me with Prophet of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was universally, no, can't do it. Can't do it, won't do it. You know, I'm not going to be part of somebody's site that has an agenda that is untrue just so that I can share the truth about Islam.
Yeah.
You know, you're the only affinity that we can have and be credible in sharing Yahweh's testimony is that of Yahweh and of our brothers and sisters in the covenant.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Totally agree.
And that's it. I would like to return to Proverbs 6, and let's make some progress. Let's retreat so that we know that speaking specifically of Paul, the one that smashed and shattered that which was vital, being the covenant and the Torah, that who appeared suddenly with his destructive and ruinous opposition, this being Paul, this individual for whom there is no remedy, there's no cure. Specifically, he says that of Paul over and over again. He says that those who believe him will find no satisfaction. He says, behold, presently, now at this present time, pay attention, there are six things Yahweh hates and seven are an abomination to his soul. This is an abomination to the soul of those who acquiesce to these destructive and ruinous lies, harmful attacks. One, haughty eyes and visions of grandeur, observations, including a rebellious perspective. Now, he's going to use human anatomy here to convey these 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
So the eyes here are only symbolic. This is somebody who sees themselves as above the crowd, you know, the leader that's always depicted as above, with a vision that goes beyond the common person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's talking about here.
Right.
Delusions of grandeur. A deceptive tongue. Politicians, religious leaders, almost everybody that God views as that God hates, deceives with their tongue. They have misleading statements. Ben Carson's stupidity today. I don't know if you heard that part. Ben Carson claimed that the pyramids were built by Joseph to store grain as opposed to built by the pharaohs to be their tombs, manage this plight from death to the afterlife.
Yeah, I've studied a lot about the pyramids. That's really a strange take.
No, there was some food storage in the pyramids. Sufficient food for one individual in the king's chamber, and enough for another individual in the wife's chamber, the queen's chamber. There was enough food for them as an individual to transition from a mummified state and death to the afterlife, according to the Egyptian religion. Hard qualifies this. Joseph's mean to keep the country from starving to death.
Yeah. Well, we'll go into that another time. I got some cool stuff on that stuff, but regardless.
Okay. Next one is hands that shed innocent blood.
Mm-hmm.
This would be militaries.
Mm-hmm.
So he's opposed to deceptive tongues. That would be the religious and political leadership, but particularly the political leadership with the haughty eyes and visions of grandeur. Deceptive tongues, religious and political leadership by the military today. I mean, the U.S. War College acknowledging that that deception, dishonesty is rife among the U.S. military. Hands that shed innocent blood, of course, this would be politicians working together with the military to kill. Paul's comment that the most destructive and deadly force in the world today is not Islam. It is, in fact, socialist, secular humanism, liberal governments, and that's precisely the facts. That's what has happened the last 100 years.
No argument there.
Well, you look at the shedding of innocent blood. The Chinese led the socialist communist regime of Mao caused the death of 40 million people. The communist liberal regime of socialist regime of Stalin,
yeah.
30 to 40 million people. Death.
I think that's not even a good number because what they did in Georgia where they starved everyone to death.
Yeah.
You know, under Stalin, you know, to take all the grain and
it's greater, really probably greater than that. And then you've got Adolf Hitler, who was, you know, the Nazi Party is a socialist party.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Adolf Hitler, you know, causing a war that took the lives of 50 million people
mm-hmm.
worldwide. So there's, and then you've got the Pol Pots, the communist regimes that killed what a third of the population of his country,
over a million, and then we've got Laos and
right.
Vietnam, and on
right.
and on and on and on. My God,
right. just, millions and millions and millions. Yep. So when you're talking about real lives, a heart or an internal attitude, a person which who devises and writes. So now you're excluding here from the singular individual. You're excluding Muhammad because he did not write.
True.
So Muhammad is one of the people God certainly detests, but he did not write. Has to devise and write. And Akiba really didn't devise, although he wrote. So a heart which devises and writes troublesome, idolatrous, false, evil plans. Well, this is based upon the word that serves as the religious center in Cairo, Egypt, the place that that God was delivering his people from. And so this would be religious plans, which are egotistical and invalid, unreliable, fraudulent.
That doesn't happen to be in the same place where the university, the Muslim university, is where Obama spoke, is it?
Al-Jahar University. It's either in or near Cairo,
yeah.
And this is near Cairo. So I don't know the proximity between the two. That'd be an interesting deal, just for curiosity's sake. But Al-Jahar University is the leading university in the Islamic world. It is the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood is the well from which all Sunni Islamic terrorism organizations have sprung. Sure, you'll notice that all of the cure-alls for everything that ails you, including your failing country, your failing military, your failing health, the cure-all for all of it is GCNteam.com.
And your debt problem with the debt company, yeah.
Yeah. So
that one.
The decision to disassociate is the right decision.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't have a problem with a supplement with minerals and I don't have problems with whole milk. I don't drink whole milk. I drink the jet hay version of it that's pure kerosene, you know, the super lean zero fat.
Yeah.
Milk. But, you know, I don't have a problem if somebody wants to buy whole milk that's unpasteurized. Be careful. But, you know, that's what you want to do. Go after it.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem if somebody wants to buy vitamins and minerals. You know, that's your thing. Go for it. It's the way that these things are being promoted. The falsehoods that are being woven into the story to sell nickels for a quarter. It's more like nickels for $5 that is troubling to me. You know, you just promote it for what it is. You know, if you want to say, we got a really good blend of minerals and vitamins, and we think that they'll help you feel good. All right. Say, you know, these are the minerals that we've included. These are the vitamins that we've included. And we put it in our drink that tastes really good. And, oh, by the way, if you join us and sell this, you can make money selling this vitamins and mineral drink to your friends.
Yeah.
Okay. But not the kinds of cure-alls. It's worse, I think, than the snake oil salesmen's of the carnival times back in 100 years ago in America.
Well, you know, that was liquid heroin, and they would come every 3 months, and now if you got hooked, then they would come back and be dying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was often heroin. Can you imagine today, speaking of heroin, somebody sitting down and saying, you know, my life really needs a kickstart. So what I think I'm going to do to get out of this rut is I'm going to spend every spare dollar I have buying a drug that if I don't like it, I'll have no way to get rid of it because it's the most addictive thing that man has ever conceived. So I have no way of stopping once I start. It's going to consume all of the money I have. It's going to render me such that I won't be able to earn a living. I won't be able to even be a productive part of society. I'm going to be, while I'm under the influence of this drug, I'm going to be in a state that my judgment will be hugely impaired. My awareness will be hugely affected negatively. And when I don't get enough of the drug, my whole body is going to be physically tortured in an agony. But I think that's what I'm going to go do. I'm going to go inject myself with this drug.
You're doing
Can you imagine?
I'm sorry.
Why would you feel sorry for somebody that's a heroin addict under those circumstances? Do you know that there are countries all over Europe now that are dispensing heroin? The government is buying it and dispensing it?
Well, I thought it revealing that one of the Saudian princes was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With the drugs.
Was found with tons of drugs.
And
tons and tons of drugs.
And apparently...
But you can't be in your right mind and be a jihadi. You can't be in your right mind and be a fundamentalist Muslim. So let's drug them.
Well, we had a pretty good drug culture going in Vietnam.
You know, if you look at Yahweh's condemnation of America in Yeshaya 18,
uh-huh.
One of the things that he says is manifest in America, that is prevalent in America, is a drug culture,
uh-huh.
That we are under the influence of drugs. And not only has heroin use increased 500% in the last decade, but prescription drugs are the biggest influence in terms of changing America's ability to be cognizant of what's happening around us. And, you know, a friend of mine owns a pharmacy, and he says, you know, we'd get, you know, most drugs in small little bottles. You know, you'd get a bottle of 500 of antibiotics or various medicines to deal with diabetes and the like. But when it came to pain medication and psychiatric mind-altering meds, antidepressant meds, we got them in by the barrel.
Really?
By the barrel. Yeah. So these giant barrels is how they'd arrive. That's how prevalent they were. I said, if it wasn't for dispensing mind-altering antidepressant psychiatric drugs and painkillers, he says, there wouldn't be a pharmacy in America. They'd still be in business.
When I had a large studio in Orange County, we had a third of our students, about 50 of them were kids, and we were amazed at how many of them were taking drugs for behavior reasons. I was blown away.
Yeah, you'd be blown away if you knew how many were taking drugs, and just people in society in general are taking drugs for behavioral reasons. You know, we did about a five-part series on drugs in America, and I listed the top 50 drugs in America and their prevalence, and then I decided to make a connection and to say, okay, here are the top 50 drugs, but let's list them by category of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Painkillers and psychiatric antidepressant drugs are number one.
Wow. It doesn't surprise me when you've been in war as long as we've been in war and been lied to as much, and some of it's so
mm-hmm.
obvious. The lies are so obvious lies, and
yeah.
How do you deal with it? You have to hide.
Yeah.
You know, it's used primarily to hide something. You drink to because you cannot face a reality.
Right, reality. And if you've been if you've been engaged in America's military and you were sent over to Afghanistan or Iraq
mm-hmm.
Based upon the lies, and you witnessed what you had to see of the people that you were there to free wanting to be enslaved by their religion and doing despicable things and wanting to kill you, you would what would you do other than
self-medicate,
drown your brain and pickle it in alcohol,
mm-hmm.
or drugs? That's why there are as many people who are receiving drugs for post-traumatic stress syndrome as there are personnel active in the U.S. military. 600,000. That's why the number of suicides from vets from the Afghanistan and from Iraq is now up above 250,000. Stunning.
What
we have done to ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's all because of people who devised and write unjust and false, evil, invalid, egotistical, harmful and fraudulent plans, who have a deceptive tongue, whose hands are all too willing to shed innocent blood, who have visions of grandeur and of
that's not a stretch.
Populations.
In it, because you're doing this, I mean, that's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's God's laying it on the lines why he hates human institutions, religious, political, military institutions. And then he says, you know, the thing that's also that he hates is individuals who rashly and impetuously run to and fro, darting about to approach, to associate with that which is evil. You know, most Americans, you know, will support the military. It's evil. They'll support their police. They're evil. They'll support their politicians, who are stunningly evil. They'll support their religion, which is the living embodiment of evil.
Yeah, load up the van. Let's go to church, guys.
Yeah, load up the van. Let's go to church. Let's give them our money. Let's pay our taxes and quarter a military that's making a bad situation worse around the world. We're impetuous, rashly, without thinking. The vast preponderance of Europeans and Americans are running to that which is ra'ah, objectionable and wrong, depraved, perverse, miserable, harmful, injurious, and essentially bad. That's why God hates it. God also hates a maligning soul whose breath utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. This Puach Kazab is such a strong pair of words together. It speaks of breathing out your breath, your soul, being dishonest. So from the very essence of your soul, everything that you say, you're a blowhard who testifies loudly and zealously, proclaiming that which is deceptive and delusional, contrary to reality, condescending, derisive, mocking and slandering, while claiming to be a valid witness. I mean, if you haven't studied Paul's letters, particularly Galatians and Romans, with an open mind, then you don't know that what he's speaking of here is the Christian New Testament, as penned by Paul.
You know, Terry said yesterday, because we were talking about that yesterday on this show, and she said, rightly speaking, if you just knew the slightest bit about the mitzvah, then his first argument against being circumcised wipes him out completely. We just didn't know. We just honestly.
Yeah, and that's the fulcrum. The fulcrum of Pauline doctrine is his aversion to circumcision. If he says, you're circumcised, I want you to be castrated. If you're circumcised, you can't be saved. And yet Yahweh says circumcision is the one and only sign of the covenant.
So
he says that if you're not circumcised as a male, you're not part of his family, which means you cannot be saved. And he says expressly that this notion that an uncircumcised person, which means a person who's not part of the covenant, can enter heaven, is the most diabolical lie ever perpetrated.
So if you do just that,
if you didn't do just that.
Yeah.
You would say, wait a minute. That ain't right. It doesn't matter whether you embrace the mitzvah or not.
The book of Acts, which was written by Paul's protege at the time, a man who ultimately came to know the truth and rejected Paul. But at the time, he was Paul's protege. And the book of Acts says that the reason that Paul was called to Jerusalem to meet with the disciples was expressly because he was saying that you do not have to be a Torah observant and you do not have to be circumcised. And that it was the issue of circumcision, as you read Galatians, that caused Paul to write the book of Galatians as an argument in favor of being against circumcision and being opposed to the covenant. It's in direct opposition to the disciples, to Yahusha, to Yahweh, to the Torah, to the covenant, and to the covenant sign circumcision. And if you just read that, and were open and honest, you'd reject it. She's right. This goes on to say this person is a false witness, and then one who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important, creating controversy and strife between brothers. The only person who claimed to be sent out as a messenger from God, who did away with something important, the Torah and its covenant, who created controversy and contentious strife between brothers, it's Paul.
That's
Christianity.
You know, well, they can't be religious leaders either, because, in the sense of rabbis, because they all agree to what it's not a controversy.
Mm-hmm.
They agree
right.
to everything.
No, there's no controversy in the rabbis.
In the Talmud, those are their agreements. They've all,
right.
They ain't fighting over it, and they said, okay, this is what we voted on.
Some of them have a slightly different take on some interpretations in the, of the Torah, and they have their own kind of take on the Torah.
But on the whole,
they're uniting the Jews. Now, they're uniting Jews under a false pretense
uh-huh.
of an oral law, but
they're not,
their goal
they're
was not to put a divide between brothers, but that's exactly what Paul did.
Mm-hmm.
Not only between brothers, between fellow Yehudim and Yisrael, but also between Yisrael and the Goyim world. The Romans, and therefore the Roman Catholic Church, hated Israel, hated Yehuda, hated Jews, despised everything that the Jews stood for. And the Roman Catholic Church celebrated this anti-Semitism. But the basis of it within the Christian Bible is found in one man's hand, Paul's. Paul is incredibly anti-Semitic. So you might say, you know, well, how can a person who is Jewish be anti-Jewish? And, the answer would be, how can someone who is a malach, a spiritual messenger, be opposed to the spiritual message? But, yes, Satan is a spiritual messenger, and he is absolutely in opposition to, his title means adversary, he's adversarial to, yeah, it was a spiritual message.
Right.
Happens all the time.
Still free will. Or choice,
right.
In the case of the Malach.
Yeah.
You still have a choice.
Yeah. Right. Happens all the time. Then it says, my son, closely observe and attentively focus upon the directions and terms of the binding contract, the mitzvah, the prescriptions and conditions of the covenant, the instructions from the father to his children regarding the family, the precepts for the commission of that which is right, the teachings regarding that which should be done from Sawa command. And Sawa command is as to act so that you grasp knowledge, which leads to understanding, to gain expertise. You know, to be in command means that you, of a subject, means that you understand that subject. Obtaining the faculty and ability to appreciate that which is beneficial and right. Recognizing that mitzvah in the Torah is often used as a synonym for Torah, teaching and guidance, direction and instruction, highlighting the correct and beneficial nature of the individual guidance being provided by the stipulations and provisions of your Father. Well, you know, there's only one set of directions and terms of the binding contract. There's only one binding contract. It only has one set of directions and terms. They are found in the Torah.
Right.
And it is the covenant and the Torah of our Father. One and only Torah, one and only covenant. And it says, and never actually forego or reject the Torah, which is the teaching and guidance of your mother. Pauline doctrine annulled the Torah and annuls the covenant in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Replaces both of them. One by the gospel of grace, faith in the gospel of grace, which is just belief in the Greek and religions and Roman charities or graces.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is a new covenant that is faith-based as opposed to circumcision-based.
Right.
That's Pauline doctrine. You just rejected these things. It's, you know, the Rabbi Akiva in creating rabbinical Judaism, he didn't annul the Torah. Maimonides didn't annul the Torah. Paul annulled the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Yosha most certainly didn't annul the Torah. He said, don't think that I've come to annul the Torah. Paul annulled the Torah. He annulled the covenant, calling the covenant in the Torah an enslaving act. This is a serious denunciation of Paul and Pauline Christianity. And Pauline Christianity in Galatians exists primarily to do away with the Torah and its covenant. And here's God says, don't closely observe the terms and conditions of the covenant, and don't reject the Torah.
Pretty plain, isn't it?
Yeah, this is literally the antithesis of Pauline Christianity, this statement.
Right.
You know, and you Christian, you're carrying around this book. You don't read it. You don't consider the conflict in it. You know, anything, when Ben Carson was claiming that that the pyramids were built to store grain and they were designed by Joseph, why in the world would this man, who is a Seventh-day Adventist Christian, believe a story that's known to humankind only in the Torah when their religion requires them to reject the Torah? Why would you believe the story? Now, forget about the connection between the pyramids and Joseph. There was none. But and his name wasn't Joseph. It was Joseph. But
no.
Beyond that, why would you tell, will you come up with this whole far-fetched truth and belief about Joseph because his life is only known to us through the Torah, and then reject the Torah's heart and its soul, which is the covenant and the mikre, the berith and the mikre, the invitations to meet with God and the family of God. Talk about stupid. Wake up, America. This says, choose to increasingly fasten them. What's them? The terms and conditions and directions associated with the covenant and the Torah. On your heart, so that it influences your persona and your inner nature. What's the first thing that Yahweh is going to do? The one thing that he's going to do to reaffirm the covenant such that his reaffirmation of the covenant has one thing that is different than his current presentation of the Torah.
Right.
So only one thing that's different in the presentation of the Torah now and when it is affirmed upon his return. What is that?
It becomes part of your nature, your heart.
Right.
But
he's writing a copy of the Torah on your heart and your inner nature, inscribing it in that which makes you you, providing your perspective. And that's what he's saying here. Choose to do that. Choose to fasten it together as part of your heart, of your inner nature, so that it's part of the fabric of your life, this Torah and the terms and conditions of the covenant. Continuously, tamid, constantly, without interruption. Would that be constantly without interruption until Paul writes about his fictitious version of Jesus Christ?
Hardly.
It is continuously, without interruption, doing this throughout all time into perpetuity. Tamid means forevermore. Electing of your own free will to place them as an adornment, to clasp or bind them all around as if actually being clothed in them around your neck, your throat, your source of breath. Rather than breathing out lies, why not adorn your neck with the Torah and its covenant? Now, is he saying tear out a page of the Torah and fasten it to your neck? Or is he saying make the Torah part of your inner nature so that when you talk, you're sharing the Torah?
It's all in you. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Part of your soul.
That when you're motivated to do something, your motivation comes out of the Torah. It's your passion. It's your love. It's your perspective. Yeah, it's who you are. Oh, and there's so much more to come, which we'll begin
good stuff
to follow up with tomorrow.